Philip Michaels, don't you understand? You're supposed to talk to me like you're some sort of detective from the old movies. Don't you understand? Don't you understand?
See, Jason, you're so vital and full of life and vibrant. Vital is what you are. I'm just going to keep repeating that word, vital. It loses all meaning. The more I say it, I sound like Walter Brennan. Magnum. My sister is vital, Magnum. Ooh.
It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, joined as always by Philip Michaels and David J. Lohr. Hi, guys.
Call me the Crystal Lotus.
Jesus. You know, Jason, I could fight you, but I'm younger than you, and maybe a little bit stronger, so I might win. But you're richer than me, so you could... I don't even know where I'm going with this.
I don't.
Yeah, like a lot of things of this hour of television we just watched.
So, The Black Orchid, Season 1, Episode 16... And if you like, if you're one of those people who believes that Magnum PI was at its best early on in its run, you might be right. If you believe it was at its best in season one, you are not right, because
no.
I give you The Black Orchid a really, look, the message of The Black Orchid, what I walked away from this episode is the rich, they're not like us. That's pretty much all I got. That's all I got.
The rich are not like you and me. They star in terrible episodes of shows we otherwise like.
I will say, in its favor, it is very much the kind of plot that Hammett or Chandler would write.
Yes.
About screwed up rich people doing screwed up things and screwing around with the poor and making them do stuff.
A theme that we have.
It's very much.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, it's very true to its genre. Is it well done?
No, this is the thing,
a theme of this show is that some episodes you get what they're going for, and the execution isn't there. I'm not sure they were going for it, but I, upon watching this episode, thought to myself, okay, I see the meta level here, which is this is an episode about rich people hiring the unwashed to give them a thrill pretending to be characters in a noir detective story that is itself a noir detective story of a sort, and therefore you've got those extra levels. But not only does this episode not deliver on that, I'm not entirely sure this episode is really trying to deliver on that. It's almost more accidental that those themes bleed over, but I could see that would be an interesting pitch, right?
It is the most dangerous game in a sense.
Sort of.
Especially by the end.
Yeah, well, but, it's sort of but again, a it's mildly like, dangerous game.
Yeah, it's kind of dangerous. It's,
the world's most ill-advised game. Our lawyers warned you against this game. Why are you playing the game?
It's not that dangerous. It's not that dangerous.
There's some waivers for the game that you're playing.
So the first scene in this is actually kind of great. There's this lady... these two ladies, and they're making a drug deal, and they're with these guys in an airplane, and it's very much what show am I watching? And it's like, we'll throw down the drugs and we'll throw down the money, and they throw down the drugs and they throw down the money, and then one of the girls just lifts up her pistol and guns them down, and they fall to the ground, and she picks up the drugs and the money, and she gets in the plane and says, see you later, sis, and she takes off. And you're like, what is happening? And then the drug dealers...
And you're like... Wait a second. Maybe Glenn Larson really did have something to do with the first season.
And the drug dealers get up and they're like, what was that all about? And they're like, my sister likes to have a good time. And you're like, huh? And it turns out.
Well, and you have you have a Chekhov's gun moment of, when she was holding that gun on me, I wasn't sure she was acting.
Yeah, right.
There are two things that immediately made me turn against this episode as I was watching it. we're 3 minutes in, and I said, they're wearing matching jumpsuits, the girls. They're in these beige jumpers, and it's driving a fancy old timey car, and you are far too quirky to make it in this terrible world of ours. And second, one of the gunmen is a balding man who has let his hair grow long. He's still having the party in the back, even though the business in the front has long since been shuttered.
Yes.
And it is a windy day on this airstrip that they're filming at, and his hair is blowing up, and it looks like he's got the Larry Fine fright wig going. And I cannot take this movie. I cannot take this episode seriously.
And that was the director making his Hitchcock cameo.
Yeah.
Oh. That's the director.
That's Ray Austin.
Oh, my God.
As Philippe or Pierre or something.
I was going to say, was that his real accent, or did he just say, I'm going to do it French?
I think he would be French. My motivation is very French.
Yeah, I think, hello, I am the Frenchman. Mo, what are you doing? The Countess will be back soon. Curly, what? Oh, no. Oh. Don't stick me in the eye with your finger.
She killed us for the drugs. Oh no.
Mon Dieu.
So, yeah, so it's all a game. And what we find out is that Magnum and Phil, both of you can help me out here or not. It doesn't matter. This isn't a very good episode.
Care.
I was unable to take notes for this one.
I thought we were just going to spend the next 30 minutes just talking about our lives.
Yeah. Well, we may get there. We may get there. But so the girl, oh, by the way, I should mention, later in this episode, in the denouement, or in the sort of the climax of it, there's that moment, a moment that refers back to the scene when the girl is actually in jeopardy, and the sister says, "This time the drug dealers are using real bullets." Apparently, according to Magnum-Mania.com, the official website of this podcast, that opening scene at the airstrip was cut from the syndicated version of the show, making that dialogue and the entire resolution of the plot nonsensical. So,
because someone looking at that would be like, that doesn't have anything to do with the story.
Cut. We could start it later. So, yeah. She shows up. So this lady shows up at the estate, and Higgins. Honestly, Higgins is baffled, but he's much too excited about the Rolls Royce she's being driven in than anything she's doing. But she's dressed up in a whole outfit that she's supposed to be a femme fatale, except Magnum is just, again, wearing his crappy Magnum clothing. Like, he's ruined. And she says at several points, because she really wants to play act with him, that he's just sort of ruined it because he's supposed to get all, he's not dressed right and all of those things. And I think either Magnum got hired to do this job and he is doing a piss poor job here, or she was not supposed to come and he's not into it.
I think she was too early.
I think that's
right. I think he was poorly briefed by his client, because his sister, the sister hires him. And probably should have said, look, you've got to start dressing like you're in a 1930s detective movie.
Which he does later. And, he has a white suit that he can wear later.
But he's got a Hammett thing.
At this point, it's
again.
Hilarious because she's trying to like play act with him, and it's just Magnum wearing his scrubs.
And he's in a tank top and going, okay, and I'll try and do it. And he keeps laughing at the ridiculousness
of it. Yeah, he does a Bogart impression.
As would anyone.
But
yeah, it's not a bad one.
It's not bad. So but Higgins, though, let's talk about the Rolls Royce for a second, because first off, the driver gets out of the Rolls Royce, and Higgins is very excited, and he asks him some questions, and the driver nods but doesn't speak, and in the way that extras who they don't want to pay them for dialogue. Although I have a theory, and this is not in Magnum-Mania.com, but I have a theory that is not an extra, but the owner of the car, who is given a cameo, but of course he's not an actor, and so you don't want to give a non-actor dialogue, but they let him be the chauffeur.
That seems pretty solid, because you're not driving, I'll drive the Rolls Royce, thank you.
Yeah, I've got
I'm
this
not
rare
one of you Hollywood weirdos drive my Rolls Royce around.
And you get to be, we use your Rolls Royce and you get to be in Magnum PI. And he's like, well, this show's not even on yet and I don't know anything about it, but okay. It's the first season.
The thing
maybe
I enjoy about this whole opening is it's a Robert Hamilton script. I usually like his scripts. He does have a real sense of the classic noir. And so the meta part of this is a lot of fun, where it's like, yeah, this is what a PI is supposed to be. And no, this is who our PI actually is on our show. He's the beach guy with the tank top. And so it's a nice little meta moment. But then, yeah, I think the script just gets lost in the meta stuff, because you can't not.
Yeah, well,
one of the things that appeals to me about Magnum, and it kind of is there in this episode, There are two things. One, Magnum is really a failure in many ways because he's he lives rent free and he sort of bums around. He never has enough money.
Yep.
And that part of it is very much on evidence here. He's a really bad detective in this episode. Second, I like the fact that like Rockford before him, Magnum gets beat up. Magnum gets beat silly. Yep. Magnum is often befuddled by his enemies, and that too is on evidence here. But those are the only two good things about this episode.
I mean, there's a great moment where Higgins says, "You know, I'll talk to you later. It looks like you've been beaten up again."
Yeah.
And it's just very understated.
That's the noir detective like trope applied to Magnum that I love. Is that it's bright, this bright, beautiful location, and he's got a fancy red Ferrari and lives in this huge estate, but he is a failure and he's kind of a schlub. And even though he's this strong, virile man, he's kind of a loser. And like the combination is fascinating and it's fun.
Yeah.
It's the rest of it in this episode. I have a feeling that maybe this episode could have been better with better casting because the sisters,
oh Lord,
especially the main sister, she's just kind of vacuous and stilted. And at first I was like, are we trying to make her someone who everything she says feels like it's badly acted because she's pretending? And then as the episode went on, I thought, no, I think she's just bad. I think she's just not good at getting across. Like, she should be giddy, and instead she's more like in a trance, which I guess later we're like, she's mentally ill, and she's, you know, she has this weird, again, the rich not like us. She doesn't take lovers. She plays fantasy games with, you know, which is, I mean, it's fine, but the way the actress does it, she's this kind of bad dialogue and kind of a vacuous, vacant stare at several points. And I don't know, the other sister's more interesting, but the main sister, we're kind of like meant to believe that she's kind of fiery and a weirdo, and I never really felt it. And without that, we keep hearing
oh, she's so vital. I don't even know what that means. So vital.
You know who I do like in this episode actually is John Ireland, who is her husband,
John Ireland falls
in love with her and has a story, and it's a good noirish kind of backstory. And then and of course the sister has been angling to get the rich guy, but instead the younger sister gets the rich guy. But he because all the time,
by
like
accident,
she wants to kiss Magnum in the play acting and all of that, and he has Rick and TC dress up like Charlie Chan and try to beat him up in an alley.
That's a bit problematic.
Although
I have to tell you, my daughter watched this episode with me, and she thought Rick and TC just in disguise getting beat up and going, make him look good. She thought that was hilarious.
Yeah,
so,
well, that was
so
amusing. Yeah.
In a way, other than what they were dressed up as.
Terrible racial stuff.
Yeah. But so it's John Ireland, what I like about that character, Wyndham Jackson, the rich guy, is it did remind me of noir movies, right? Because it's like, look, my wife has unusual tastes, but we have an understanding.
She has proclivities.
And like, I get that. And I felt more from him as he's feeling real jealousy at Magnum because Magnum is a threat to him. And that and Magnum's like, no. But like, coming from him, it's total. I believe that part of it, like, there was some life in that part of the story. It's just that the rest of it was like these kind of zombie-like, the zombie-like lady who's play acting along the way, and she never really in the scene where he's trying to let her down, and then the people who are the thugs, not hired by her but hired by her sister, or no, that one's hired by John Ireland to get Magnum off the case, she's not any in the, that scene where she's supposed to be more normal, she's not really any better. I'll give credit to the plot. You never know whether the thugs that are going to beat up Magnum are real or fake, except for when it's Rick and TC, whether they're hired or who hired them, because there's three layers of people hiring people to beat up Magnum. That part, and I at least appreciated intellectually.
And you have wheels within wheels, right? You see the same repetitive cycles. It's like, it's always two guys sent to beat him up, or it's always, you know, there are mirrors between the real life and the game, which again, you know, noir plotting. But John Ireland, You know, he tells us how he fell in love with her. He tells us how she's so wonderful and vital. And you believe it, but it's all telling because we don't see it from her at all.
Not from her.
Like, I don't see the two of them together and see how does that happen. But if you just listen to him, you're like, well, of course.
Let me ask you guys a question. You've both seen Maltese Falcon, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Many times.
What's the weakest part of Maltese Falcon?
Oh. Oh, dear.
I don't know.
Let me put it a different way. Who's the weakest character in Maltese Falcon?
Bridget?
Yeah. Mary Astor. Mary Astor is the weakest part of Maltese Falcon, and both the sisters in this are doing Mary Astor impersonations.
Yes.
Where it's like, Mr. Detective, and they're both doing that weird transatlantic accent that's not quite British and not quite American. Both of these actresses are like from the main sister is from South Carolina and the other sister's from Minnesota. So these are not British people, yet they're doing these weird British accents. If we had Anthony here, he would be all what the Christ are these people speaking?
That's actually what bothered me the most. Like, I get she's got a line of dialogue about how their father was the pastor and
our father was a pastor at a very fashionable church and everyone was rich, but we weren't rich.
What they want to do is have them be, but this is the thing, is like, okay, again, it would have worked better for me if she did the weird affected accent as a character. And then when she broke out of her cosplay and whatever, then it was like a regular person and she was messed up. Like, there would be some interesting kind of like contrast. Nope.
But it all feels like, because she never changes her terrible accent, it all feels like a put on.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, it's not that good an episode. And yet apparently after the show was over, Tom Selleck and Larry Minetti opened a restaurant in Honolulu and called it the Black Orchid after this episode. Why?
Going back to the London episode and my theory about there actually being like Doctor Who plots hidden in Magnum episodes.
Well, this is a Doctor Who episode, literally called Black Orchid.
A year after this, there's Black Orchid, where they're play acting a murder mystery.
With Peter Davison, who, of course, we know from the English episode of Magnum PI.
I think there's something else going on there.
I would, for all the Doctor Who fans listening to this Magnum PI podcast, I'm sure there are four of them out
there. There is a Venn diagram which makes like eight people.
It's me and David,
at most.
Apparently. So I was going
certainly
to make
that's two thirds of the people on this podcast.
I was going to make a Black Orchid Doctor Who Black Orchid joke. And then I watched this episode and it broke me and I couldn't do it. So thank you for bringing that up, David. Now, I want to get to the most important part of this episode of Magnum Podcast, which is when we enter our favorite segment.
Oh, a new segment?
No, it's not a new segment. It's a recurring segment from a few episodes ago. It's a
returning segment.
It's, hey, Philip Michaels, tell me what you think about the hats in this episode.
Well, tell you, Jason, do I have to sing about the hats people?
That was the theme song.
The
you don't have to. It's not a musical.
Sure.
It's the hat segment. I just want to point out again that the Chinese typewriter hat is in this episode two.
Season one, where we had not yet established the prevalency of the Detroit Tigers cap.
Right.
And Tom Selleck had that old cap lying around.
Yeah. So we get that Tiger's cap again. That's the Lou's auto body or whatever it is. I don't even remember now.
Al's.
Come on.
But he
show
also
some respect to Al.
I want to call out that is there, and also that Magnum dresses up in his white suit and has a white hat that he wears that is
fedora. I think he would call that.
Yeah, it's a fedora.
It's not a Panama hat.
Yeah, and
as
Magnumania tells us, it's a cheap hat, not as nice at all as the one that Frank Sinatra wears in Laura, which is about as bad an episode as this one. So basically, I guess maybe Phil, tell me what you think about this theory, which is fedoras on Magnum PI are bad.
Hang on. I enjoyed this a hell of a lot more than Laura.
Oh, I'm actually going to disagree with, well, I normally would have disagreed with you, but then watching it with my pals and making fun of Laura made me appreciate Laura and how terrible it was. Whereas this is just bad.
It's just bad. Oh, yeah.
It's just bad.
No, I would agree with the Fedora equals bad Magnum episode, because, you know, I don't know how many times you've been to the islands, Jason. I would say I've been there between eight and 10 times.
Yeah, I probably 12.
Almost a dozen times
12,
at this
15
point
times,
in my life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we live on the West Coast. We have that advantage over David. David, have you ever been to Hawaii?
I've watched a lot of Magnum PI.
All right.
Okay. I don't know about you, Jason. Sorry to exclude you, David, from this conversation. I don't see too many goddamn fedoras when I'm in Hawaii.
You
I don't
know,
see
I
too many
say.
People going, hey, buddy, I'm Sherpy, the Hawaiian guy who wears a fedora. No
Very
one wears
few
a fedora.
Fedoras.
Unless there is a Guys and Dolls revival at the Hawaiian Light Opera Company.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't see fedoras. So anytime they wear a fedora, that's Donald Belisario working out his issues.
Yes.
About,
now, is this the same hat that Joe Santos gets to wear every time he appears on the show?
No.
Because it looks pretty similar.
Hey, there you go.
Oh, wow.
Maybe they just pass it around.
Becoming a hat podcast now.
Yeah.
Welcome to the hat
squad.
Well,
now we're going to have to watch all the Joe Santos episodes and, like, do a frame-by-frame breakdown.
Anyway, by the end of this episode, I was basically staring at that Al's Tigers hat and saying, hey, I could talk about that on the podcast. So there.
Yep. I've got a new segment to introduce.
Oh, yep. Mm-hmm.
If we're done with talking about the Black Organ, I assume we are.
Oh, are we?
David, do you have anything left to say about the Black Organ?
I was just going to say, if you enjoy John Ireland, go watch The Naked City on Amazon Prime.
Oh,
he's really good
gonna,
in that.
I was going to say, go watch The Man Who Would Be King.
Absolutely.
All the King's Men. Excuse me, All the King's Men. Watch The Man Who Would Be King. He's not in that. You'll be disappointed. How the hell did he recommend that? No, watch All the King's Men, which is a different movie.
I would recommend The Man Who Would Be All the King's Men.
And
yes, that's an even better version.
I recommend Ray Austin, the director, because sometimes
I don't understand what we're doing here.
He
in
just
Louisiana.
Put on an accent, and this is how we do the drug deal in the islands. All right.
And,
what's your segment, Phil?
Speaking of accents,
the new segment is called Phil's Daughter Reevaluates Episodes We Already Talked About.
All right. Is that the theme song, or are we singing this part too?
No, we're just singing the theme song.
All right.
We're not light operetta.
So this weekend, my daughter says, show me a crazy Magnum episode.
Oh, man.
And I said, okay. Well, actually, she wanted to see the episode because she had seen part of it where, show me the one where TC becomes a fighter and the girl renames the dogs.
No.
And so we rewatched that and she found it to be delightful. She did not have the problems with it that you had. So through a child's eyes,
a sense of debt.
A Sense of Debt is a very good episode.
Did she enjoy the Detroit Tigers plotline?
She actually did because
I believe that. Yeah,
because when I get excited about something, she gets very engaged.
Did she enjoy TC?
It's Alan Trammell.
Did she enjoy TC driving the Ferrari into a pig pen?
She did.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Jason,
part.
There was no part of this episode that she did not like, and she literally loved the part where. And all this weekend, we've been walking around going, "Oh, TC, I lied to you. There's one more thing, TC. I wasn't honest." So that is now a thing between me and my daughter, where we're going to now look at each other. I didn't tell you the full truth, GC.
This segment is going to be what father-daughter bonding occurred over a Magnum PI episode.
Magnum PI episode as opposed to the good ones. Because I sure as hell ain't going to show her, like, did you see the sunrise?
Right.
Echoes of the Mind, no.
No.
Watch The Arrow That Is Not Aimed with her and then talk about plates.
Yes, no. And ninjas.
And ninjas in limos.
Ninja limos.
Oh, man,
when you, are forever
honey, when you go to the prom, you can have ninjas in your limo.
Yes, when she goes to the prom, she's only going to want a ninja limo. And I'm, honey, that is far too expensive for daddy to pay for on his salary.
We don't have ninja limos. That was an 80s thing. They don't have ninja limos anymore.
I mean, we had them at my prom, but that was the 80s when there were still ninjas in limos. Sure.
Well, that
I had ninjas in a van.
I think we put enough lipstick on this pig as can be put.
Yep. And the pig was almost run over by TC and his Ferrari. So
exactly.
Well, I will say, when I got about a third of the way through this episode, in my head, I'm like, did I pick this one? And and at least three times I thought that and went, no, it was Phil. But
no,
but then, you know,
me.
20
no,
more minutes.
It was random. It was a random number. Don't blame this one on me. This was chance.
Random.
But yeah,
this
it was just
chance.
Like,
I take no.
I literally kept forgetting if I had picked it or not, which was kind of scary.
Well, anyway, Black Orchid season 19, serial 5 of Doctor Who. Check that one out. It's a two-parter, so it's really short. It's only about 50 minutes long. Check it out.
Don't you dare watch it.
But don't watch
this.
It's
pretty good.
No. Yeah.
And that's it for this. What is this? I don't even know. I'm a broken man. It's Magnum Podcast. I've been Jason Snell. They've been David J. Lohr and Philip J. Michaels. Bye, guys.
What? No.
38 years ago, I kind of enjoyed that episode. And yeah. Ooh. No.
No, it's not a good episode, no. David. I'm stuck in Walter Brennan mode now.